Hi there and welcome.
You're listening to Animals and Us, Voices of a New Paradigm.
My name is Avantika and I'm a researcher exploring animal consciousness, environmental sustainability, and planetary health. I want to help bring animal perspectives to the table and transform our relationship with the natural world.
And I'm Barbara. I'm an animal communicator and retired veterinarian. My true passion is exploring the hearts and souls of animals and helping people come to a much deeper understanding of who the animals truly are at their core.
This podcast is for anyone who loves animals and nature and has an interest in their own personal and spiritual development. We'll bring you powerful conversations with fascinating people about animal and nature sentience, consciousness, and communication.
Thank you so much for joining us on this journey of love, respect, understanding, and care for the fellow beings who share our beautiful Mother Earth with us.
Hello, everyone. Here we are with another episode of Animals and Us, Voices of a New Paradigm. And we have a wonderful guest today that I am so happy to have here. Her name is Rachel Gabriel, and Rachel was born and raised in Missouri, and at a very young age, she knew that the natural world was her playground. And when she was old enough, she volunteered as a veterinary assistant and later became a veterinary technician. She moved to Ashland, Oregon with her two children in 2001, and then attended Southern Oregon University and graduated with a degree in psychology. Realizing that her true calling was working with animals, she decided to focus on integrating her knowledge and experience to carve her own niche with local residents and their animals. And I am one of those residents. My boy Ari is one of those animals. And Rachel and her husband Marcus have had play days with Ari for probably a couple years now. And my dog Ari turns himself inside out and screams and jumps and rolls around. He's so excited when Rachel comes to the house. And Rachel can talk more about this, but sometimes there's 12, 13, maybe 16 dogs all at the same time going out for playtime. And yep. They would pick them up in their van, all these dogs in the back, take them to a yard, let them play, and drop them off back home. It's been such a tremendous gift. But Rachel and Marcus are about to move away from us, and we're all very sad. And you can talk about where you're going, Rachel. Where are you going?
We are moving to the Missouri Ozarks. A few years ago, we wanted to have a retirement plan. And so we were fortunate enough to find a piece of land that's about 6 acres, and about 5.5 of it is all mature hardwood. It's 100% off grid. So we'll be living off of solar and catching rain for our water. We're going to have gardens and chickens and beehives, and we're going to be growing medicinal mushrooms as well. So we're really looking forward to it. It's a big adventure.
That sounds so exciting, Rachel. So, you know, I've heard so much about you through Barbara, as you know, and all amazing things. I'd love if you could share with our audience how you describe the work that you do and what you've been working on and what led you to this work.
Oh boy. We consider ourselves facilitators for positive social interaction and pack play. The way I got started really goes back to the end of 2011. I was getting close to finishing up my degree, and I knew that I missed working with animals. I was a vet tech for almost a decade, and I had moved out of that. And I really missed working with the animals. It was, I feel like that's just affinity for me, working with animals. So when I was close to finishing up Marcus and I had a conversation about what my next steps were going to be in life. And as serendipity has a way of working out, we ran into a couple that he had worked for when he first moved here in 2000 at the local shopping center. And I asked him if he was still providing services of house sitting. And he said, no, but as it happens, this is my wife, Rachel, and she's doing this now. So in the end of 2011, I started with one house sitting job. And into 2012, I had gotten a couple more house sitting clients and a couple of individual dog walks. But most of my time was spent working on a ranch, helping a woman with her four dogs, her horse, her pony, and her dozen hens with a very ornery rooster. And so I worked with her for about a year, all the while picking up more and more dog walks. By 2014, I was so busy with dog walks and house sitting that I had asked Marcus to go part-time at his job. He was working in telecom. So I asked him if he could go part-time and help me. And so we started walking dogs individually. We would split up in the morning and head out our separate ways and walk dogs. The next couple of years, we got so busy that I hardly ever saw him and I was hardly ever home. So we looked at each other one day and said, smart people would do this together. So we had dogs in the same neighborhoods. And so we timed it to where we could meet each other and do walks together. And it just evolved from there. We realized that through our observations that the dogs were having more fun as a group. And so we started putting dogs together that we felt were compatible. At the time, we were doing three separate packs. And it ended up becoming one large pack. And we noticed that they thrive. The dogs just absolutely thrive in a pack environment. And to watch the bonds and the friendships that formed was unexplainable. It was just something amazing to behold. So by the time we finished a few weeks ago, yeah, we had anywhere from 12 to 16 dogs in a pack.
Wow.
Depending on the day.
That sounds like so much fun. I wish my dogs could have had an experience with you and been part of that. I can just feel the energy of that, how exciting it is. And I imagine that you were both also, it sounds like you're both just naturally very good at that too, and understanding what the dogs need and helping them socialize in a way that's like healthy and exciting and fun for them.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I started, really what got me into dealing with dog behavior was Marcus's dog. When we moved in together, he brought a dog with him, and his dog Loki had some pretty major separation anxiety. And I decided at that time that it was not healthy for him, because the first 3 months that Marcus and I were living together, Loki would sit in the window and cry for 8 hours while Marcus was at work. And I knew at that time it wasn't healthy. So I started to look into ways of helping Loki overcome his separation anxiety from Marcus. And really, ultimately, what it came down to was relying on my psychology training. It sounds so weird, but when you're dealing with dog behavioral issues, 9 times out of 10, it's the person that is causing the behavioral issue in the dog. So I started working with Marcus, because Marcus had certain behaviors when he would leave and certain behaviors when he would come home that would exacerbate the situation. So ultimately, it was working with Marcus and assuring him that breaking out of these behaviors was still showing love to Loki. It was actually healthier for Loki for him to not exhibit those behaviors. And it was also through the bonding of Loki and I, and me ultimately knowing that I had to become his pack leader, that helped Loki overcome his separation anxiety. And in doing so, I learned about the need that dogs have to have a strong, confident pack leader in their life. So that's really what got me into this, and observing the behaviors that dogs had, especially in a social setting. Because when you separate the dogs from their own people and put them into a dog pack with other dogs from separate households, you get behaviors that their people don't even see. And so naturally, as a pack leader, you start to work on those behaviors and help them become the strong, confident beings that they ultimately are.
I have a question, Rachel.
Sure.
I know that a lot of people deal with separation anxiety in their dogs. It's really common. And I wonder, you said there's some tips that you gave Marcus on how to get away from that. Could you just briefly talk about how people can deal with separation anxiety?
Sure. It's no big deal. When you leave, your dog is going to be okay. When we sit down and look our dogs in the eye and touch them and tell them, "It's okay, buddy. I'll be right back. You're going to be okay." You're giving them the impression that it's not okay, because that communication that you're giving them is only alleviating your own anxiety. And because dogs are energetic beings, they're picking up on your anxiety. Our emotions come across to them as energy. So when you're anxious about leaving your dog because you know your dog's going to have a certain behavior, you're creating a closed circuit. So your dog has anxiety, you have anxiety, and when you engage in these behaviors, it keeps that loop closed. So what you have to do is break that loop, right? So when you leave, you don't even think about it. You just grab your keys, your wallet, you walk out the door. Now, for really bad separation anxiety, I tell everybody, pick up your keys, your wallet, walk out the door for 5 minutes, come back, no big deal. You're back. Don't even pay attention to your dog, because the dog has to start realizing that it's okay, that it's going to be okay. So once the dog has gotten that hyper energy out of its system, then you can go, "Good job. What a great job." The next time you leave for 10 minutes, no big deal, as you're walking out the door, no talk, no touch, no eye contact. You come in, same thing. Don't even pay attention to them until they've calmed down and they moved on from that hyper state of being. And then once they've calmed down, "Good job. Oh my gosh, that's so great. You did such a good job." And you can progressively get longer and longer with your time away until it's absolutely no big deal whatsoever. Then you've broken that separation anxiety. But first and foremost, you have to get yourself out of that thinking. Like, my dog is not going to be okay while I'm gone. Oh my gosh, what's my dog going to do while I'm gone? Your dog's going to be fine. We go to sleep for sometimes 8 to 9 hours a night. And most of the time, dogs are okay for that. Our thinking as humans is, "Oh, well, I'm in the same house." Yes, you're in the same house, but you're not consciously present with your dog. It's the same idea as leaving during the day. It's no big deal. It'll be okay.
That's really helpful. I'm going to keep that in mind now, because you know, there's always room to grow. There's always work to do. So
absolutely.
Really helpful. Thank you.
Yeah.
I hear you're thinking about writing a book. Tell us what that's about. Is it related to this? Like, is it related to the psychology that goes into how you work with dogs? Tell us more.
It's kind of a mix between a memoir of my time with the dogs, but also my own observations about the packs that we form with our dogs within our households, and how pack interaction can be beneficial for dogs. And my own observations of pack behavior, their communication between each other, the communication between ourselves and them, the communication and the structure within our own households. It's just kind of a mishmash of what I've learned over the last 12 to 13 years of working with animals in this very intimate setting. Because like I said, you know, I was a vet tech for almost 10 years. And so your interactions with animals in that setting, in a medical setting, is completely, totally different. Most animals are pretty afraid of being in the vets. They have a negative reaction to it. So you're not seeing the full potential of what a dog can be. But what I've done in the last 12 years is absolutely see the full complete potential of what dog and human interaction can be like. So it's my thoughts on pack interaction, pack structure within the household, behavioral issues, my thoughts on training, and just kind of where I came from and how I got to here.
Yeah, well, I can't wait to read it. Please let us know when it's out.
Absolutely.
Great, Rachel. Yeah, we'll wait for that book to come out. And you know, you talk a lot about pack mentality and the importance of being a pack leader and what that means, not just in the work you do with lots of dogs, but in a family situation with dogs. Can you talk a little bit about that, about what that means?
Yeah, absolutely. So dogs are social creatures. They're a pack animal. They thrive in packs. If you look at dogs in the wild, African painted dogs, wolves, you know, even the smaller dogs like coyotes and dingoes, they live in packs, and there's pack hierarchy. You have an alpha pair, and everybody else falls under the alpha pair. When we domesticated dogs, we took that alpha pair away from them in the canine sense and made humans their alphas. The way that dogs have evolved is that they are no longer just a working companion. They no longer have just a working function. They're more of our babies, our fur babies. They're our children. They're part of our family. We've made this massive shift to they're not just, you know, another mouth to feed. They're actually beloved members of our family. And when you do that, we tend to anthropomorphize dogs quite a bit because they do experience emotion. They just don't experience emotion the same way that we do, but we as humans tend to forget that. And so they become equals to us. And that's not beneficial for dogs because they are pack creatures and they need that pack hierarchy. A lot of behavioral issues come from humans not being the strong, confident pack leaders that they need. You hear other trainers like Cesar Millan talk about being a pack leader. He has effective methods, but I find that he's very cookie cutter in the way that he deals with behavioral issues in dogs. His thoughts on people needing to be strong and confident in dealing with their dogs is absolutely right on. Because when you're not confident, I'll give you a really good example. So let's take a dog and a person. They're out on a walk. The dog has never had an issue before, runs into a leash aggressive dog, and the dog attacks the other dog. The person has experienced trauma. Whether how large or how small it is, it doesn't matter. The person has experienced that trauma because there are beloved pets, there are beloved family members, and we never like to see our family members hurt. So now we have this preconceived notion that, oh my gosh, when I take my dog out, something's going to happen. And we hold that into our bodies. And as I said before, dogs feel our emotions, because our emotions come through as energy and the dogs pick up on that energy. And what happens when you go, oh my gosh, there's another dog coming, you're all tense and tight and you're communicating that anxiety through the leash. And dog goes, oh, you're not a strong, confident pack leader. So I need to be a strong, confident pack leader. So one negative interaction has now created a chain reaction. And dog says, oh, there's a dog coming, blah, 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 right? And now you have that closed loop cycle. Instead of going, oh, this negative thing happened to my dog, that's no big deal. As a pack leader, we have to be strong and confident for our dogs to be able to navigate through the world in a strong and confident manner. When we're the strong, confident pack leader, they don't have to. They don't have to feel that role, because they have to have it. If we're not it, they will fill it. And that's where behavioral issues come in. So when you're a strong, confident pack leader, you can deal with behavioral issues in a much more effective manner. You can nip certain behaviors in the bud before they even become an issue. And you can ensure that your dog is going to have positive social interactions, because it has to happen. For a dog to be happy and healthy and thrive in this world, they have to have positive social interactions. It is a must.
And some dogs are more social than others too, just like we are.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Dogs are individuals just like us.
And you know, this is a really controversial thing these days, I think, this idea of pack leadership and all that in discipline, which I'd like to hear your perspective on that. You know, there's so many people, I've seen so many people that take their dogs out and they're all sweetsy and like you said, they're equals, and the dog does something, some aggressive behavior or whatever, and the person just kind of accepts it and doesn't really take the lead, doesn't become the authority. And I've just seen it where the dogs can get really, really out of control. And that doesn't mean to be mean to the dogs or aggressive with them, but just to assert authority. That's been my experience too for all these years with dogs. So can you talk a little bit about that and what about disciplining your dog and what that means? Or should you just be positive and giving them treats and rewarding positive behaviors? A lot of people believe that now. So that's why I said it's pretty controversial.
It is controversial. I think that we have moved as a society into a place where there can never be anything negative. You know, it's all about how we feel. I raised two children by myself, so I understand the need for discipline. The problem, I'll address this first. The problem with purely positive reinforcement of dog behavior is that you're never telling the dog what behavior is incorrect or inappropriate. All you're trying to do is refocus the brain on something else, rather than teaching the dog this behavior is not appropriate in this situation. All you're doing is redirecting. And while it may work, you're taking more time and you're not addressing the inappropriate behavior. You're not addressing the root causes of the behavior. So when I talk about disciplining dogs, I'm not talking about being harsh. I don't talk about being mean, even though if you watch dogs in the wild correct each other, it is harsh. It looks violent to our eyes, but it's not. It's the way that they deal with each other. So the way that I have dealt with discipline in my years of doing this is that there's a behavior that is inappropriate. I'll have two dogs interacting with each other. They'll be playing, and then something happens and one dog will go, this is enough, I'm tired of it. And they'll turn around and try to snap. my discipline, my correction is, no, we don't do that. Dog goes, okay, and moves on. It's no big deal. We don't hold on to any of it. We don't linger on it. If it escalates, I call them tiffs, but they're really not even tiffs. Just you're pushing, like if we're in the van waiting to get to where we're going, if one dog got too close to another dog and crowded their space, then you'd get some grumbles. And I wouldn't even have to look back there. I'd just be like, that's enough. That's the discipline that I'm talking about. It's just me. To me, appropriate dog discipline is being aware of what your dog is doing and catching the unwanted behaviors and nipping it right there at the spot. And when they go, oh, okay, you don't want that, that's when all that positivity really comes in. When they catch themselves, when you say, no, don't do that, or uh-uh, because that's my favorite one, is just the uh-uh, because they know you like I said, we project energy. They pick up on that energy and they go, okay, pack leader doesn't want that, so I'm going to change my behavior. I catch that and I go, oh my gosh, you're so good. What a good dog. I'm about positivity. It helps. It does. But if you don't correct the negative behavior, they don't learn. They don't learn that, oh, this isn't appropriate. Oh, this is not what my person wants. This is my pack leader doesn't like this. So I need to not do it. Because once you do that, they get it. They're so smart. They catch on so quickly. And also because I have a psychology background, Pavlov would be so proud of the work that I've done. Classical conditioning works. It's so easy. Once you get it, you get it. And once you see it, you see it, and there's no going back. I love that people want to be positive with their dogs. I'm positive with the dogs. But sometimes you have to give a correction. You have to. There's no way around it. And when they understand that, man, there's not enough positivity. I love it when I see the dogs get that, and I can just get down on their level and just love on them and tell them what good dogs they are. It's one of my favorite things is to watch the dogs learn and grasp concepts. And for me to go, we both win in this situation.
That's great. And you know, I go with you that I think there does need to be some leadership. And I think that's a question that probably a lot of people have about leadership is, how do you establish that to the point where you can just say, and the dog actually pays attention? I mean, how do you assert yourself to a point where you can actually be the pack leader without having to be at all aggressive on your own part?
It really goes all the way back to the time that you first get your dog. I believe that there are certain ways, if you're adopting your dog from a shelter, I believe that there are certain ways that you should approach that adoption process. It starts with walking your dog and making sure that you're both comfortable on your walk and not allowing your dog to pull you. I see that's the main complaint that I've heard from clients over the years is, how do I get them to stop pulling on the leash? And I tell them it's because you allow it. You know, when you are walking, you are in charge. And if you don't mind a dog out in front of you, that's great. I'm totally okay with that. But what I don't like is the pulling, because that's the dog leading you. And that's where that confusion comes in. Because dog says, oh, I'm leading this now, instead of you taking control of it. I like little tiny leash corrections in those. It's just a little tiny on the leash and saying, no, we're not going to do that. And you may have to keep doing it. But eventually, with the classical conditioning, they get that. Oh, I'm getting that little tug on my leash, so I need to stop pulling. I think people give up, you know, they find that it's too hard and there's too much work, and that's where a lot of people fail, is that they just don't have the patience for it. Dogs take time. They take patience, and being a pack leader takes time and it takes patience. It takes perseverance. You have to stick with it. You have to, because once you give up, you're telling your dog you're not worth it. And I have to say that every dog is worth it. Every dog. I have worked with some really aggressive dogs. It doesn't mean they're less. It just means that they have some problems that they have to work through, and I wasn't the right person for them in that moment, but I know that there's somebody out there that is right for them because they're all worth it.
Yes, they are. And I with the walking on the leash, what I learned many years ago as a trainer, and I've used it, is that you make a lot of turns and you kind of give a little real quick tug on the leash and coax the dogs forward. I talk to them all the time and just make sure they're with you. But what this brings up for me is I think a lot of people, in my experience, are afraid that if they assert any kind of authority over their dog, that the dog isn't going to like them, the dog is going to be afraid, the dog, those kind of things, rather than realizing what I've seen, and I know you have, is when the dog knows what's expected of them and they have some boundaries and some rules, it actually can make them a lot more secure
Oh,
and more loving.
absolutely. Absolutely. It enriches their life. I've had a couple of people tell me that if you train a dog, if you even train them to obey the most basic of commands, sit, stay, hear, heel, name recall, you're stifling them. And I've never understood that. When you give a dog something to do, they thrive. They're intelligent, learning, capable beings. And if you just expect them to just be, what a boring existence that is. When you take the time out of teaching your dog commands, teaching your dog tricks, that's my favorite thing, was my favorite thing to do with the pack, was teach everybody new tricks. By the time we finished up, I had most dogs shaking, most dogs no shake, but I had most of them shaking. My favorite thing was touch. I love nose touches right on my hand. I had every single dog touching because they want to please. They want to learn. It stimulates them mentally. And I feel like that when we don't give them that mental stimulation, they become bored and they have behavioral issues because of their boredom. So I see training, becoming a pack leader, as enriching because you're fulfilling a role in your dog's life that is vital for them. They have to have an alpha. They just have to. If they don't, they're going to fulfill that role. It's enriching. I've never understood the people that don't understand that. To me, they must not have a basic understanding of how packs work or how a canine brain thinks, because they have a specific way of thinking, they have a specific way of feeling, and when we just put our own thoughts and emotion on them, we're taking away from them. And when we allow them to be dogs that have a purpose in our life, their lives are so much more. They just are more. They live happier, healthier, and longer lives. It's my experience.
And so we've talked about you and I about aggression in dogs, in that there are different kinds of aggression, not all the same. And I know you don't work a lot with aggression with dogs, but you've had a lot of experience with it. So can you just really briefly talk about the different kinds of aggression so people listening can understand what that's about?
Sure. The most common form of aggression that I have encountered over the years is leash aggression. And people are just not, they don't understand where it comes from. So I talked a little earlier about how when we hold a leash, we communicate through the leash. Our fingertips are really sensitive. Our emotions come through our body and it communicates down through that leash. So when we are tense or anxious, it communicates through that leash, and dog feels like it needs to compensate for that. And it's also a form of keeping a dog back. They feel like they're not free to move about. And it dogs like an equal playing field when they interact with each other. Leashes take that away. It makes it unequal. And so you get a dog that's being held back by this leash with a person that may or may not be anxious. And so it comes through as aggression. Really, it's insecurity. So when humans are insecure, we have certain behaviors, certain facial expressions that we have. For a dog, it's really, they don't have a whole, our repertoire, if you will, of expressing what they're feeling and what they're going through. And so leash aggression, fear-based aggression, anxiety-based aggression, it all comes through as I'm going to attack you, even though I'm not really going to attack you. I'm going to make you think I'm going to attack you. It's, real aggression is something that is really hard to overcome. I've dealt with one dog that had real aggression, and she was out for blood. It was just a really sad situation, and I helped ever so slightly. But there are just certain things that happen in a dog's life, especially as they're young dogs. It forms these patterns in their behavior, and it shapes their entire life. And it's sad, but it happens. I feel like that every form of aggression can be overcome with the right person and the right training. But you just have to learn how to identify where your dog is coming from. That's why I really, in my book, I want to talk about how we as humans can interpret and identify what dogs are saying. I want to help bridge that gap because I feel like that there is a gap with a lot of people about how they talk to their dog and how their dog talks to them. And that's where I think aggression, a lot of that fear or anxiety-based aggression comes from, is because dog is trying to tell us something and we're not understanding what it's trying to tell us. And so it comes through as these inappropriate behaviors in the form of aggression.
Yeah, thank you. That's
Yeah.
helpful.
I think to some extent, sometimes I think people should go through training before they bring a dog home, because there's a lot to know. And I think these days, especially even just speaking for myself, the way we got into and brought our first dog home, like I had no idea what I was doing. It's my first time. But I think the intention that we go into that whole process with, I think there's a lot more thought that could go in there, a lot more conversation, a lot more understanding of what dogs are like, what do they need to be successful. And that's really what it comes down to, right? Is like giving
Yep.
them that, giving them what they need so that they can be successful. And I'm not sure how many people think about that when they're choosing a dog for themselves, whether it's from a breeder or from a shelter. And so, could you speak to that a little bit? Like, when someone is choosing a dog or going through that process of finding a dog to bring home, what are things that they should be thinking about? And are there differences between breeds as well as we talk about some of these behaviors?
Sure. Well, I guess the first thing that I would ask anybody when they're thinking about bringing a dog into their life is, what's the role that you're looking for your dog to fulfill? Do you need a companion? Do you need somebody that is more energetic? Do you need somebody that is smart and has the intelligence? Do you need somebody that needs to work? Because that's where the you know, if you're adopting a puppy, if you're buying a puppy from a breeder, which I think that everybody should adopt a shelter dog. I love all dogs, and I know that breeds serve specific purposes. But if you're not going to fulfill the genetic predisposition of a purebred dog, I think that shelter dogs are the right thing. If you're looking for a companion, please go to the shelter and adopt a dog. There are so many dogs that need good, loving homes. So if you're going to go to the shelter and adopt a dog, I recommend that you do multiple trips. If you have a specific dog that you think you're interested in and your shelter allows you to place a hold, do that. But I don't think that anybody should adopt on the first day. I think that you should do multiple laps around the shelter and look at all of the dogs. If there was one dog that catches you, like you're like, oh, this feels good, I think you should sit down in the cage. I love this guy on YouTube named Rocky. He goes into a shelter in Southern California, and he tries to break these dogs out of their shells, because when a dog has been surrendered into a shelter, you've totally upturned their entire world and their existence. And they go through the most unimaginable trauma that they've ever been through. And what he does is he sits down and has the dog get used to his presence and his smell and his voice. And then he'll like give them treats. And I find that his method is pretty amazing, because when you give a dog a chance to just feel you out, you get a better sense once they become comfortable, because being in the shelter is a very traumatic experience. It really is. I mean, I try to ask people to envision yourself being in a prison cell. You've known freedom, you've known love, you've known a rich and fulfilling life, and then all of a sudden that's taken away from you and you're put into prison. It's traumatic. We have this massive adjustment that needs to go through. And I think that when people walk into shelters, they're not really seeing the dog as who they are. They're seeing this dog that's gone through trauma, that feels isolated and lonely and cut off and unsure of themselves. They've lost their confidence. They've been dealt a massive blow to their whole self, their whole being. And so I always tell people, you know, if you're going to go into the shelter, just, if you can't sit in the cage with the dog, ask the shelter people to bring a dog into a quiet room so that you can just be with each other for a few minutes. If you have another dog in your household, introductions should be, you should do the initial introduction with just yourself without your dog. Then you need to bring your dog in and just let's see how that goes. Because if you know your dog's own temperament, some dogs are a little bit more submissive. Some dogs are a little more dominant. And you want to find another dog with the temperament that complements your dog. And it's just getting the sense of the dog that you're going to adopt, you know, because they're going to have a shift once they get out of the shelter and into your home. So the dog that you see in the shelter is not necessarily the dog that you're going to have 6 months after adoption. So I always tell people, really make sure that you know what you want. If you're going for a purebred dog from a breeder, know what the dog's genetic makeup is, what their breed, because breeds have specific purposes. For example, Australian Shepherds, they have a very specific purpose. Their genetic makeup tells them to behave a certain way. And so they want to herd. They're for herding cattle, sheep, for herding livestock. And so if you are going to have an Australian Shepherd in your life, you need to make sure that you have a job for your dog to blow, to get to work that energy through, because that's what happens, is that you get a specific breed. And you know, there's a, dogs have the purebreds have so many different uses. You know, you have your hunting dogs, you have your vermin dogs, you have your herding dogs, you have the working dogs. If you're going to get a purebred, make sure that it is in line with your own lifestyle.
That's really helpful. Thank you. So you spoke a little bit about this, about how to introduce dogs to each other and how to bring a dog into the household. Do you have any suggestions, any tips on how to do that in a way that's beneficial for everyone involved?
Neutral ground is always a good place to start. So I love walks. Walks are such bonding experiences. When two dogs get together and they go for a walk, they get to smell the smells together, they get to mark together, they get to experience the same things together. And so it's a really strong bonding opportunity. So it's taking them for walks and sharing food. Those are the two experiences, the activities that you can do that create a bond
So when you
between
say sharing food, what do you mean by that?
treats,
Okay.
having a snack together. You know, it's because you get to understand if the dog that you're thinking of adopting has any food issues, because some shelter dogs can have food issues. They can become very resource guarding. And you would just want to make sure that, because when you go, here's a treat for both of you, you put them on equal ground. And that's really what it comes down to when adopting a new dog into your life, is you want the new dog to understand that they are on the same level as the other dog. So one's not better than the other, but it's also keeping in mind that one may have a more dominant temperament and the other more submissive temperament. It's a very, very fine balancing act that you have to do.
It seems to me that some dogs, especially if they've been mistreated or they've lived in the shelter or they've been in a household with a bunch of other animals competing for food, that if you introduce a new dog to your dog in the house right away and you try to feed them together, you could be setting yourself up for some dominance, aggression behavior, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's your job as the pack leader to recognize if there are going to be any issues with resource guarding. And if there is, it's making appropriate adjustments. So maybe you can't feed them in the same room. Maybe you can't feed them at the same time. It's recognizing if there are any issues and making the appropriate accommodations to deal with those issues so that it doesn't become a problem.
This is great stuff, Rachel. And I know you've spoken about dogs as energetic beings. And that's a lot of what we talk about on the podcast. And what I do as an animal communicator is work with energy. So can you address that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, well, we're all energetic beings. If you really think about it, we're made up of energy. If you've ever, experienced a very intense emotion, you know the energy of it and how it feels in your body. And because dogs do not communicate the same as us, they watch, they feel for that energy. Like Maggie, who has been a part of this whole conversation, you know, she looks to us and she knows if we're in a good mood. Oh man, she just knows it. It comes across in our relaxed posture, our relaxed face. Our voices change when we're in a really happy, relaxed place. And if there's a stressful situation, if you have a dog in your life and you're going through a very stressful moment, you have to know that your dog picks up on that. You can observe it through their own behaviors. And it's just all of these nonverbal cues that we give off as human beings. And the way that dog has evolved through the millennia and being a part of our lives is they have learned to read that energy and to also communicate with their own energy. We have observed over the years, if a dog's not in a good place, their energy is totally different. If there's something going on in their home, it comes across. It's so apparent by the way that they interact with us, with the other dogs, their own energetic levels, as far as, are they going to run around and play, or are they just going to sit there? It's fascinating the way that energy communicates through different species. It's just the way that we interpret it as humans. Dogs get each other. We complicate it as humans.
Yeah. And by the way, for people just listening, Maggie is a cat that's hanging out with Rachel during this whole show. And I think that my dog Ari reads my mind. If I think about getting dressed to go for a walk, if I just think about it, he's in my room looking at me, waiting to go for a walk. So, have you experienced this a lot where the dogs actually can read our minds?
Oh, absolutely. Because it's energy. It just goes right back to the energy thing. Our thoughts have energy. Our emotions have energy. We project it. We like to think we're so sophisticated with our frontal lobes and our higher thought processes. But when you break it all down, we're animals. We're all animals sharing this beautiful planet. And one of the things that we have done in this job is we house it. A lot of our clients are our dog pack outing people, and we create these bonds with their dogs, and so we are fortunate enough and trusted enough that we house it when these people need to go out of town. And I know Marcus and I have experienced this so many times that we could be totally thinking about something non-related to dog, but the moment that our brain switches to either a walk or treat or dinner, dog could be sound asleep and dog goes, "Oh, what are you thinking about?" So yeah, I mean, if there is a such a thing as telepathy, as mind reading, I think dogs have it down pat. They're so in tune with us. We have such an intimate relationship with our dogs. How could they not pick up on our thoughts and our feelings and the projective thoughts that we have? It's like, yeah, hey, but it's also at the same time, you have to wonder, do our own thoughts, we have our own routine with our thoughts. So it's like dogs thrive on routine. We've discovered this over the last 13 years, is the more routine that you have, the more a dog thrives. They just love it. And so I think that subconsciously we go, "Oh, it's probably getting close to walk time." And dog goes, "Hey, it's getting close to walk time." And all of a sudden you both are thinking the same thing. And dog goes, "Oh, hey, I know what you're thinking. Let's go."
It's so true. So true. And we're going to miss you so much, Rachel. Oh my God. Yes.
We already miss the dogs.
Yeah.
It's been Marcus and I have talked a lot over the last week. He thinks it's perpetually Saturday. Like, don't have to get up and work, so it must be Saturday. And we're a little lost with our routine of the dogs. It's been a huge transition for us because it's been our every day for so many years.
Yeah,
And
but
we
you're going
miss.
to do great. You're on to your next adventure.
Yes, absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
Yes.
So, Rachel, tell us, is there anything else you would like to share with us?
I think the main thing is to remember that your dog is a dog. Your dog is not a furry human being. As much as we want them to be, and as much as we think they are, they're not. They're dogs. They have dog thoughts. They have dog feelings. They have dog routines. And if you're having issues understanding what your dog needs to have a happy, healthy, thriving life, find somebody that can help you understand. That's why I want to write my book. That's why I want to get my thoughts out there for people. I really think that the more tools that we have in our toolbox, the better prepared we are to deal with the situations that arise in our life, especially when it comes to dealing with our dogs, because they're such an integral part of our lives that we forget sometimes that they're dogs.
And you know what's coming to my mind is on this podcast, a lot of what we talk about is the spiritual lives of animals, animal consciousness, the fact that, you know, we can have this deeper spiritual connection with them, that just as humans have spiritual lives and realities, so do they. So as we've been talking, I've been thinking a lot about how that intersects with everything you've shared with us in terms of actually being a good leader for your dogs and giving them what they need as a dog. So I think that's also an interesting balance that we need to have when we can recognize that they are spiritual, energetic beings. They can read our emotions. They're so in tune with who we are. They have their own spiritual lives, but at the same time, they are dogs just as we are humans and just as we have human needs. They have dog needs as well. And so we need to find that balance because though we can respect them and acknowledge them and really appreciate them for the beautiful, energetic, spiritual beings that they are, we also have to recognize that in the day-to-day dog form and human form that we share together, that there are things that they need in order to thrive and to be happy and healthy.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And they do have their own spirituality, if you may. I like to tell people that nature is my church, and the beings that we share this planet with are my gods, because I have such profound respect for the lives that every living being has on this planet. They bring something unique. Every single one of them brings something so unique to this planet. And I feel like that when it comes to the spirituality of the other living beings, it's about respect. It's about, as a human, not taking more than you need and giving back more than you take. And that really plays into our relationship with our dog, because they give so much to us, the love and the loyalty and the companionship. They just give and give and give. And my goodness, isn't it such a blessing that we have that we get to give them so much more than that? We get to give them security, happiness, a home, consistent, healthy food, the guidance that they need to live their fullest potential. That's our responsibility, I believe, as stewards, is to give them every opportunity to reach their fullest potential. As it's the same with children, as parents, that's our goal, is to be that guide, to give them every single opportunity. And with dogs, it's just a little bit easier. You know, they don't talk back. That's the great thing.
Yeah.
But I think that if we fulfill our roles as the human pack leader in our own individual packs, we have fulfilled the spiritual needs of our dogs, because then they have the confidence and the full capability of giving us everything that they have to offer.
I love that. And I know you're off on your next adventure and you're going to be busy over the next few months, but tell our audience, if they do want to find you, if they do want to connect with you, how they can do that.
Absolutely. We have a YouTube channel. Over the last few years, I've been posting videos of the dogs in the pack, their interactions with each other, best buddies. And on YouTube, it's at Creatures Comfort 1111. We also have an email, and it's fiddleinthesticks@gmail.com.
I love that.
And
thank
I would I'm totally open to anybody reaching out if they have questions about their dog's behavior or communication issues. I'm totally open to having people reach out to us in regards to that. And I would love people to subscribe to our YouTube channel. It's going to shift a little bit now that we're moving. It's going to be about our homesteading adventures. But once a week, I'm going to be posting archive dog pack videos, because I have lots of videos.
I can only imagine. Oh my gosh. Well, thank you so much. We'll make sure that those links are up, and we really look forward to following you on your journey. And I just want to say, you know, thank you so much, Rachel, for being here today. You've inspired me to think a little bit more and be more mindful in terms of what kind of leader I am and what kind of leaders my husband and I both are. I know consistency is important, and it's something that I think about often in our household. So I'm definitely going to pay more attention to that. I also am excited to go back to teaching them new things. I know that's important for them and for their mental stimulation. And, you know, as they grow up and you kind of get into a routine, it's so easy to just keep doing the same thing again and again. But I know how exciting it is for everyone involved when they learn new things and you can teach them new words or teach them new tricks, or even playing with new toys and new types of games. So excited to do all of that. And I also want to thank you for touching upon the fact that, you know, it's important to satisfy, just as it is for humans, you know, satisfy the physical, mental, emotional needs first, so that we can all thrive, and then we can work on, you know, the other things that we're here to do together, and to do, you know, then to work on the spiritual needs and fulfill all those things that we're so capable of doing. So thank you so much for sharing everything. We had so much fun talking about all that you've learned over the years, all the stories you shared. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much for the opportunity. It's been, I you can tell this is my passion. I love talking about the dogs. I love talking about my observations of them. So thank you for this opportunity to fulfill my own passion. And by the way, whoever said that you can't teach an old dog a new trick was so wrong.
Thank you, Rachel. This has been so wonderful. And, I've seen you in action, and I know that the things you talk about are real, and that you walk your talk, and that the dogs are so excited to be in your presence, because you just instill in them a sense of confidence and security, you know, that's so important for these animals, and also the playtime. And I know not everybody can have playtime all the time like we've had with you, but still, playing with your dog is so important, and it really intensifies that bond, just like all the other things you've talked about. So thank you for sharing all that with us and for your wisdom, for your love for the animals and for nature. And it's just been an honor and a pleasure being with you today.
Thank you so much, both of you. I'm very grateful. Thank you.
So before we close, we're going to have a short blessing for the animals.
We'd like to end this podcast by taking just a moment to be quiet. And we give thanks and blessings to these amazing animals that we share our lives with. They give us so much and ask for so little in return. We hope that you can keep the animals and all living beings in your heart and in your mind as you go about your day. Thank you so much for being here with us today.